As I indicated to the end of these last weeks that God gives me here as your pastor, I've chosen to go to some places in the Word of God where we find the last messages and some significant things. And so, Joshua chapter 1. If we were to read it like it's really written in the Hebrew, there would not be a now begin that verse 1. It just simply be a man, because it's a continuation of the chapter. And we look at Deuteronomy. Now, I thought the truth points out that the first four books of the Bible are really grouped together. As Exodus or Leviticus and Numbers each begin with the word and. But when we come to the book of Deuteronomy, it does not begin that way, because it begins a new series, a new grouping. The book claims the story of God. But the book of Joshua, in the Hebrew, begins with a man, indicating the continuity of what God has been telling us. And if I might read it that way, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister. Let's go back to this moment to think about Joshua. In the book of Exodus, chapter 17, all of a sudden, Joshua appears on the scene without any introduction. The Israelites, under the leadership of Moses, are only about a month out of Egypt, and they encounter their first enemy. The Israelites are a ragtag, disorganized mob of people of 3 to 4 million altogether. They've never had any training as warriors. They've been slaves all their lives. All of a sudden, they are confronted with the Amalekites, who will be their enemy as long as they live. And so a battle ensued, beginning in verse 8. Then came Amalek and fought with Israel and rescued them. And without any introduction, given us background or anything else, all of a sudden, in verse 9, we're told that Moses said unto Joshua, choose men, choose out men, and go out and fight for the Amalek. We don't know why he chose Joshua. We don't know anything about his background, other than that he is the son of a particular man, but that's all. And that God led Moses to call this young man up to be the commander in general of the forces that had to go and fight. But it tells us something about Joshua that he did. That he was the kind of young man that Moses could look at and say, there's a young man who can be a leader. And he puts him in his first leadership role. The next time Joshua appears on the scene is in Exodus chapter 24. And all of a sudden, after God has spoken and given the commandments to the people of Mount Sinai, it is time for Moses to go up on the mountain and get the upon which God has uttered those 10 commandments. And all we are told, verse 12 of Exodus 24. And the Lord said unto Moses, come up to me into the mountain, and be there, and I will give thee the tables of stone, and a law, and a commandment, which I have written, that thou mayest teach them. And the next verse says, and Moses rose up in his ministry. Joshua. And Moses went up into the mouth of God. No explanation at all. Just a few weeks after the event we read about in chapter 17, now Joshua is characterized as the ministry, that is the servant that Moses has been set aside. The next significant mission would be taking place over yonder in the Book of Mormon. For the time came when Moses led the children of Israel up to the border of the Promised Land and sent across to the kingdom across the Jordan River 12 men, one from each tribe, to spy out the land. And all 12 came back carrying the bounty they had found. One of the 12 said, "We can't do it." Two of the 12, the young man by the name of Caleb and the grand doctor, said, "Oh, yes, we can." And they actually wept. And so stood in the minority, saying, "Yes, we can." As in accounting of that, as God sums it up, God passed the sentence of judgment upon the whole nation of Israel and said there shall not be a single individual who came out of Egypt as an adult. He shall go into the Promised Land with the exception of Joshua and Caleb. And then turning over to chapter 27 of the Book of Numbers, it's now the kingdom of the wandering. Every adult in Israel is a young adult, with the exception of Joshua and Caleb. They're 40 years old, approximately now. So they're somewhere in their 60s. There in Numbers chapter 27, verse 18, the Lord said unto Moses, "Take thee Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay thy hand upon him, and send him before Eleazar the priest, and before all the congregation, and give him a charge in their sight. And thou shalt put some of thine eyes upon him, and all the congregation of the children of Israel may be obedient. And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall ask counsel for him after the judgment of Urim before the Lord. And by his word they shall go out, and by his word they shall come in. Both him and all the children of Israel with him, even all the congregation." Moses did as the Lord commanded him, and he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest, before all the congregation, and laid hands upon him and gave him the charge as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses. You might call that Joshua's ordination service. Moses didn't put him God there. Come on back to our passage in the Book of Joshua, chapter 1. We'll come back to Joshua, the man, in a few minutes. Reading again, verse 1, "And after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead." Turn back to page in the Bible. Deuteronomy chapter 34. Notice verse 7. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force of aging. Moses did not die because of old age. did not die because of poor health. He died because it was God's time for him to die. Circumstances were changing. Turn back to Exodus chapter 3 in your Bible. God had given to Moses an assignment. He had reached out to the desert and he found an 80-year-old man who didn't know much about him, if anything. And he took him out of the midst of his humdrum everyday life, where he had been a rebel and a runaway. And he called him to a burning bush, and he gave him a sign. And he said to him in verse 9 of Exodus 3, "Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come up unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. Call it now therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." Moses said unto God, "Who am I, that I should go unto Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt?" He had an acute awareness that he was not worthy of that, nor was he capable. Notice the next verse. And he said, "That is God, certainly I will be with you." God gave an assignment to Moses, and if we were to spend time reading more in chapters 3 and 4 of Exodus, we would find more about what God meant when he said, "I will be with you." Moses was a unique servant of God. One of the greatest men, perhaps the greatest man, I'm not sure, who's ever graced this planet. At least, through Moses, significant things happened that have forever changed the course of this world's history. Between the great nation of Egypt and the great nations over in the east around the Euphrates and Tigris, there's a barren strip of land bordering the eastern edge of the Mediterranean. There was basically worthless, except it was a passageway between those two great civilizations. It was there that God had spoken to Abraham some 400 years before and promised to give that land to his descendants. But saying, first of all, before that happens, your descendants will have to spend four generations or 400 years in slavery. Now it was time for them to be set free. And God reached out into the middle of the desert then and called Moses, who was at that time in his life nothing more than a sheepherder, and said, "I want you." Moses, as we read, had just wondered, "I can't do it. Why are you asking me?" And the conversation would go on, and we didn't need it. And Moses said, "Get somebody else." And God said, "No, I want you." And God called him on assignment for which he was strongly feeling incapable. And he protested that was his assignment in life. 8 years he had spent in preparation for that. You know, sometimes we don't want to spend the time in preparation, do we? We want to get on with the purpose in life. We want to find out what we're here for. We're one person is anxious to get on and do the thing that's important, but for 8 years, Moses didn't do much of anything important. It's finally the time has come. God's purpose is always the time of importance. He led the children of Israel to freedom. He stood on Mount Sinai to receive the commandments of God. He introduced this new nation to God. The name of which God the Son. He received those words, those heavenly words out of the mouth of God that would forever change the course of this world. Some people try to say that, oh, the Hammurabi came before this, but not so. God's commandments, those 10 statements of eternal truth, began to form the basis for a civil society wherever it's found upon the face of the earth. Yes, and he also introduced to the people how to worship God. What a man he was. The time came for him to die. If you read a moment ago in Deuteronomy 34, verse 7, he didn't die because he was worn out. Because he was sick with evil, he died because he was to finish what God assigned him to do. That's always the most important thing, to do what God tells you to do. Finish the task that God has given to you. All the circumstances of Israel had changed under the leadership of Moses, and it was now time for somebody else. From bondage to freedom, from the disorganized mob to now united society, though loose it was, we began prepared to receive the promised land, and now being enabled by God to lead the people. Moses is also two unique men, two different ones. Matthew Henry said in his commentary that God will change hands to show that whatever his instrument he uses, he is not tied in it. You see, every man is unique in his makeup and in his purpose. Every single one. But no man is indispensable. The people thought Moses was, though they rebelled against him frequently as they wandered through the wilderness, they wept when he was taken home by the Lord. Nobody takes the place of another man, Dr. Francis Schaeffer says. He pointed out in one of his little books that no man is indispensable, but every man is unique. Men are dispensable. The principle does not mean that another man fills another man's place in the same way. As a person would remove a concrete block and replace it with another, we're not sticks and stones that God maneuvers around. We're individuals and people that God molds and makes and calls to specific purposes. And God has called Moses to one, and they now call Joshua to another. But the common ingredient was that though the man had changed, God remained the same. And sometimes the journey of life takes us through some difficult challenges the experiences that we feel unprepared for. But God is saying, back to Joshua chapter 1. After God said in verse 2, Moses, my servant, is dead, God then said, now, therefore, arise, go over the judgment thou and all this people under the land, which I did give unto them. Even to the circumcision. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that thou shalt give them unto you, as I said unto Moses, from the wilderness of Lebanon, even into the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of Hittites, and all under the great sea, for the going down of the sun shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. God told Moses, I'll go before you. Whatever the past seven years, their history was saturated with example of how God had been with them. He had spread the waters of the Red Sea. When they were thirsty in the wilderness, God had given them fresh water to drink. And when they were hungry, He had fed them. When they were threatened, He had protected them. And when they were confused and wandering, He had guided them. And when they were cold, He had warmed them. When they were hot, He had sheltered them. Always doing that which was on this earth and unexpected, and that which only God could do. You see, the end of Moses was not the end of the presence of God. Sounds simple to us, but these people had never known anybody else to represent God to them. Nobody had ever told them about God. Nobody had ever shown them about God. God had even spoken to Miriam and said, as I said with you last week, that there was nobody else to whom God spoke face to face. Now God had buried Moses, but God continued on. And His message to Joshua and to the people emphasized that, as I was, so I will be. Even the blessings will continue. Moses had been His answer. But the work of God was in no wise hindered by the decease of His servant. No matter how imminent He had been in His office and in His service to God, nor how much God had used Him to bless the people. Because one said that was all the workmen be removed. God's work was gone. God already has plans and petitions. You see, unknown to Joshua and unknown to Moses in the beginning, and certainly unknown to the people, God had plans. He knew when He would remove Moses. He was already making preparations and training and preparing this young man, Joshua. Those things that we read about in Exodus 17 and 24 were not accidental. They were part of the plan and preparation of God. So now God would be with Joshua as much as He had been with Moses. And you need to pay attention to those little words like as. Because when you walk through the valleys of darkness in your life and the challenges that you cannot understand, it times and into the times of confusion, the times in which you cannot see, you need to know that as God has been, He shall be. As He has walked with this one, and as He has walked with you, He will continue to do, and He will surprise you with His goodness and His provision. We must continue to take those steps, as we shall see. And so the end of Moses, the instrument of God, did not mean the end of God's provisions and promises and blessings. Continuing on with our reading here in verse 6, just as God had said to Moses, and Moses had said previously to Joshua, be thou strong and of good courage. For unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. For unto be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law, not just the part you understand. Not just the part you agree with. For the part you have gotten, you have already been with the path and allowing God to fulfill His promise to you. You see, for God to be as with Joshua and the people, as He had been with Moses, there must then also be the faith, dependence, and obedience exercise. The active steps, decisions, and forward marching as they have done with Moses. And then verse 8. This book of the law shall not be poured out of our mouth. But thou shalt meditate therein. Thou mayest meditate therein. If thou mayest observe to do, that is, be obedient, according to all that is written therein. And then thou shalt make thy way. And your good success. The only place in all of the Bible the word success is used. Would you understand who it is that the word prosperous means to possess property? All of them are specifically obedient. Would they possess the property of the promised land and find the joy and fulfillment and happiness that God had promised to him? God put the same conditions on Joshua that He put on Moses. Verse 9 says, have not I commanded thee, be strong, and of good courage, be not afraid. Paul would later write, many years, hundreds of years later, in Romans chapter 8, so what if all of these things be against you? If God be for you, who can be against you? Be not afraid. We believe that this morning. And we can do this. For the Lord, thy God, is with you. Let this world about doors. God expected the very same things from Joshua that He had from Moses. That was, that is, explicit, detailed obedience. You see, when we are fully obedient unto God, we are dependent upon God. Obedience and faith are synonyms. You cannot say you have faith in God if you are not willing to obey God. It is our obedience and our faith And I again am marveled at the creativity of God in everything from my mouth. I think that other people differently. Our God is a great God. God has your time in your life. Whatever part you are not willing to be obedient and submissive, they go together. Whatever authority that God brings into your life, at that point you will deprive yourself of God's presence. Sometimes there will come and what you do not recognize seemingly small ways. Those are big ones. The spirit of Satan would stir your heart to go in the kingdom and do what you want to do and what you think is right. And it may simply be another opportunity to exercise your faith in the building of the Lord. It may be painful at times to exercise obedience. It's the only way you find the blessings of God in your life. And oftentimes, the blessings of God will come when you least expect them. In ways that you would never pre-plan for. So I do not know what's going on in the lives represented here. And I do not need to know. I'm not the provider God is. What is certain of this thing, brother, is nearly important to God, to where you are. You are important to Him. He has plans and purpose for you. And He would like to put His power, His blessings in your life. That's it. God changed the name of Joshua and started out with the name of the Lord, which means salvation. Numbers 13:16, he changed the name of Moses to Joshua, which means, "My name is Jehovah, will save you." Far more important than the labor of God to do something for us than for us to do something, or attempt to do something for God. God has spoken to your heart this morning about some decision that you need to make, He wants you to make. So, about the same hymn of invitation inviting you to make that decision, it may be to trust the Lord God as your God. Thank you.